There's no one model to be a founder. There's no one model to be a leader. I think showing up authentically as yourself in this founder role is really important.
Hey everybody, welcome to Identity Unveiled. We are a lifestyle platform that talks about career, beauty, health, and to help support the advancement of Asian American women to the executive ranks.
Heather Shen is co-founder of Praxis Labs. Praxis Labs is a software company that delivers immersive learning and actionable insights to improve workplace diversity and inclusion. Really phenomenal work that she's doing to help marginalized groups, including Asian Americans, and how we are treated in business. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Tell us a little bit about your upbringing and really those formative events that really inspired you to become the trailblazer that you are today.
Well, Praxis Labs is all of, like, our mission is how do we make workplaces and ultimately society a more equitable and inclusive place? And I think to start with that, I think a lot of this stems from my own family, how I grew up. Both my parents immigrated from China. Landing in Rhode Island is where I grew up and was born and raised. And while I think I had really a lot of privilege growing up, I also was really struggling with what does it mean to be Asian American in a community that was primarily white, very homogenous. And I think both my parents recognize this. I like to share the story about how I consider my mom one of my first DEI teachers, because she would come into my elementary schools all the way up to high school to share more about Chinese background and heritage. So that was my very first lesson in perspective taking and sharing across cultural differences. It's one that I've taken in all of my personal and professional life. And as I was thinking about what kind of impact do I want to have in my own life, in my own work, I was drawn to this idea of technology because of the opportunity it has to change the way that we work and communicate and connect with one another. So I ended up going to Stanford, studied electrical engineering there, got introduced to virtual reality as this kind of new and emerging technology that really changes the way that we can view and interact with the world around us. And ended up pursuing that, went to NASA, researched computer vision and augmented reality as ways to help pilots take off and land more safely. So my big takeaway there was there's something here about using AR, VR, mixed reality to really train technical skills. Moved on to Microsoft, where I worked on the HoloLens, which is an augmented reality headset. And at the time, Microsoft was thinking about what are the business applications for AR? How can this be used to disrupt entire industries like construction and plumbing and design? So was really inspired by all of that. So by the time that I ultimately did go back to school for my master's, again at Stanford, with a focus on electrical engineering again, I had the good fortune of meeting Elise, and she was coming in with all of her own lived experiences and those that was inspiring Praxis Labs. And so much of that, of my personal background, of my professional background, kind of really led to the formation of Praxis and what we're doing today.
Let's talk about your journey as being a founder. Tell us how it was when you started at a very early stage, and what was the most significant struggle you had?
Oh, I mean, it's been a journey. I think some of my biggest lessons are around how do you be adaptable? How do you pivot when things are unexpectedly thrown at you? When Elisa and I met and kind of were starting to be full-time on Praxis in earnest, it was at the height of COVID. You know, it was around the summer of 2020. We had gone through and kind of proved out some of the initial impact that we can have with Praxis through real VR headsets. Like, all of our training was designed to be in person, facilitated with the VR headset. And clearly none of that is possible in the height of a pandemic. You know, at that point, Elise and I were remote as well. So we were trying to figure out, how do we continue knowing that there's something here? We want to make sure that we're continuing our impact, but our current solution just isn't feasible with the constraints that we have. And so kind of going through all of that, going through that journey of ultimately landing on something that we can deploy through a web immersive experience, kind of taught me the power of being iterative, thinking about being adaptable, really thinking about the challenges at hand and using those challenges to hone in on like what is more scalable, what will ultimately help us longer in the outcome. And now I think the pivot to really focus on web immersive has been one of our biggest value propositions and has enabled our ability to move into the enterprise in a way that if we had focused on VR headset only, we wouldn't have been as successful.
Amazing. So what is your current stage and what is the amount that you're looking to raise?
Yeah, so we are a Series A company. We, over the past couple of years, we've raised over 15 million in funding and have been using that to fuel kind of the team development, product development, and impact that we're ultimately looking to have. We're partnering with Fortune 500s right now, like Google, Etsy, Merck, just to name a few. And we are really excited about this next chapter that we're in, really developing that go-to-market engine.
Was it difficult securing funding and why?
I mean, if you think about things just like from a data perspective, maybe less than 1% of all VC funds go to Black founders, less than 2% of venture dollars go to all female founding teams. Elise is my co-founder. She's one of only 30 Black women in the US to raise more than $10 million. I think when you look at those numbers, clearly there's some structural inequities at play that is limiting the access to venture capital money. On top of all of that, you have these two women of color founders starting a DEI company. I'm sure you can imagine how some VCs reacted. So, you know, when we were first starting out, we had a lot of people who were saying that, you know, you're just a social impact venture. Like, you know, this is a great if you want to have like a nice to have, but they weren't recognizing our potential to drive meaningful business outcomes. And I think obviously that's disappointing. And like you could go through your fair share of like failures and rejections. But I think ultimately that was for the best. We have always wanted to have mission aligned investors on our cap table. We really want to make sure that who we're working with believes in investing and building workplaces that are equitable, that are inclusive, that help improve business outcomes like employee engagement, retention, innovation. Like I think we're solving some of the biggest business challenges. So we want people who are here and want to be along for the ride as supporters and see that as an opportunity. So yeah, I mean, I think ultimately we're really grateful to have a mix of investors from really various backgrounds, female founded funds, Black founded funds, Latina founded funds, among many others. And so it's really important for us as we're thinking about our mission, driving positive change in society, and ultimately achieving these business outcomes can go hand in hand with one another, as not mutually exclusive.
And outside of money, what are you looking for in terms of investors or VCs?
What we have found in our relationship with building with like our investors and supporters is the connection to some of the biggest organizations who are looking for and are values aligned with our mission. Some of that is so valuable of getting that introduction, of building that relationship with potential partners in this work.
Yeah, and then also just curious, you know, with this economic downturn, what has been different for you guys?
I think actually despite the economic downturn, or maybe because of it, it is maybe the most ideal time to focus on investing and reskilling and upskilling your people, helping them thrive. I think the being able to find people-centered leaders and investing more in their people helps organizations navigate through these uncertain times that require human skills like empathy, collaboration, inclusive leadership. And I think that's what we're finding amongst all of our partners is, you know, the focus on how do we navigate some of these challenges together? And how do we come through and make sure that we're building a stronger business because of this, as opposed to shying away from all of the hard and human conversations that need to be had?
Heather, but you know, what are you doing differently though? Because it's a tough market right now.
Yeah, so some of the things that we're really focused on that is tied to what we're hearing from our clients and partners is the focus on impact. How are we measuring ROI and making sure that we're tying it to those high level business outcomes so that when we go in front of a CFO, a CEO, we're able to say, hey, we have actually helped your teams be more productive. We've helped you retain talent in a really tough environment. We've helped you improve employee engagement when, you know, a lot of people are uncertain or are scared for their jobs. That in itself is really powerful and strong. We're also really focused on are connecting our work in DEI to skills. So what are the skills that you and managers need to lead an inclusive and equitable team, lead through changes and navigate this uncertainty? And ultimately, because of that focus on skills, we're really excited about this opportunity for practice, focusing on bite-sized scenarios that can be fit in the flow of work and enable learners to practice and fail.
So let me turn this a little bit towards a conversation about leadership. I do found it fascinating that it is to minority women founders, and now you're in a business to really change it for women that look like you. If you had like this magic wand, what's the first thing that you would do to change or implement to really address the structural inequities for minority women leaders, for even Asian American women leaders, because that ideally is our focus here, but what's kind of structurally, what would you wish for?
It's a great question. I think, you know, kind of magic wand, there's a ton of things I would want to do. I think one of the things that we really believe at Praxis is that leveraging data to inform how we, you know, have targeted interventions, think about structural changes. And right now, what I believe as to be some of the biggest challenges for Asian American women leaders is the disaggregation of data. So being able to disaggregate data means that we're able to refine these interventions and define how we approach problems, especially around race. I think AAPI is such a broad term and it generalizes communities from different regions. So, you know, a lot of the current data doesn't actually capture all of the experiences of the AAPI community. What I experience as an East Asian woman is going to be different from South Asian to Pacific Islander. So I think being able to better understand what do different communities need and, you know, create interventions for those communities is really important.
There's a question I have that often comes up with many women that we work with. There's this pressure around kind of that perfectionism, you know, to get things right. How do you handle mistakes in your career?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is something that I'm still growing in, and I hope that I will continue to grow in. One of the things I've been really grateful for is the community I've built around myself to support me in those moments. I need like that coaching and feedback and mentorship to, you know, point out when I failed and be like, hey, that's a mistake and let's learn from that, and shift the mindset to from being like, oh my gosh, like I'm scared, like I just made a mistake, to wow, that's actually, it's a very normal thing to make mistakes. And what's most important about that is how can you learn from it and move on and take those learnings into the future, any future obstacles that you have. As co-founders, I think it's really important that we embrace the ups and downs of an entrepreneurial journey. It includes getting things wrong and thinking about when things haven't worked, because I think it's actually in those moments where you are able to pinpoint when things haven't worked as well, where you get that chance to learn from that for yourself, for our team, and for our processes and product that we're making.
So what do you love the most about your entrepreneurial journey?
I think for me, it is about like finding that community. I would say that it's like being a startup founder is really unique. It's, you know, it can feel really lonely, but I think when you're able to find a community of folks who are similar minded, who are excited and like going through challenges and like working their way through, it's like really exciting and fun to hear, oh, you're dealing through that. I went through that like last month. Let me tell you about how I approached it, or like I'm going through this. What have you seen, or what have you done to think about that? So yeah, I think finding that community of like energetic, passionate, and optimistic people has been something that's really been a highlight.
I think Diane and I couldn't agree more on the power of community. So I love that. When you think about your, you know, being an Asian woman, what do you consider to be a strength that your culture has brought to the way that you lead as an entrepreneur?
I think one of the things that I've grown up and kind of learned from my culture and my family is the value of like collaboration and understanding different voices around the table. It's something that I've brought with me to Praxis. When I think about my leadership, I really think about how do I act as like a servant leader, as a collaborative leader, and really think about who else is speaking up and making sure their perspectives are heard as well.
Heather, what's coming up for Praxis Lab? Any current news that you'd like to highlight?
We have some exciting releases coming up. I think the focus on skills and being able to have these bite-sized practice moments are really important and really exciting. We were just nominated for a World 50 Innovation Award, got selected to Accenture's Spotlight program. So there's a lot of really exciting things happening in the Praxis world, and excited to share that with the wider world soon.
Love that. Let me end then with the last question that I had was on my mind. What's the advice that you would give to other Asian American women who want to start their own business?
I think for me, one of the biggest struggles I faced was imposter syndrome, second guessing myself, and just knowing that there aren't a ton of Asian American women out in leadership positions right now. It makes it really hard to imagine that for yourself. I think the piece of advice I'd give is like, there's no one model to be a founder. There's no one model to be a leader. I think showing up authentically as yourself in this founder role is really important, and one that I think is essential to making sure that this is a sustainable endeavor for you and those around you.
Well, thank you for your time, Heather, and thank you for coming on the show. We love hearing your story. We need to get more stories like you out there.
Thank you. Good to be here.